It's Saturday Night.
Five.
Saturday night.
Get ready for the Saturday night.
Louder!
Saturday night's alright.
On Saturday night.
But we are live, Dynasty Saturday Night 5 on the Going for Two YouTube channel. We are a Dynasty Fantasy Football podcast on the Going for Two Live Network. If you're listening on the Going for Two Live podcast audio feed, please follow, subscribe, rate, review, all that jazz. If you're watching here on the YouTubes or other video platforms, do all the other things that feed the algorithm monster, like, subscribe, comment, bells, and all that. We have very thoughtful conversations about Dynasty Fantasy Football. We use lists of five as our vehicle to get into the topic that we want to talk about. I'm Brian Ford, joined as always by my co-host. Before we introduce our guest, my co-host Josh Walker. Josh, how you doing?
Doing great. The weather here is perfect. I got to sit outside for a little bit with the dogs. Just drafted an auction baseball draft, so that's fun. I hate my team, but, you know, it's a good time of the year. We're getting ramped up with rookie stuff. The draft is coming. Other sports are starting to begin. So it feels like we have like a month or two off, so it feels like it's ramping back up. So it's kind of good.
I might be the oldest person here, but I'm hearing in my head, Bismarck Key, it's spring again. You know, it's just – the days are getting longer. It's sunny, yep. You know, it's warmer. It's beautiful. All right, so we're going to do some unpacking tonight of free agency, frenzy, fallout, foolishness, freaky, fuzzy, furry, funky, fidgety stuff. And before we get to our guest list on that, any just general takeaways you have about the free agency period and the wild week that we've been on, Josh, or anything stand out to you as surprising or anything like that?
The one that just happened, the Justin Fields signing to Pittsburgh, I thought that was done when Russell Wilson got signed, but that just happened. And honestly, I'm still trying to pack it all in. I know we say this a lot, that this is like the busiest free agency, but this one just feels like the bigger names are going different places. So I'm actually got a new like excitement for the season just to see how these new teams work out with some of these new players. Yeah, so it's just a lot. I'm still taking it all in.
A lot of big name quarterback movement, like historically name value running back free agent class. A lot of fun stuff. We were just talking before we started recording about the soapbox moment. If you're on Twitter and your first reaction to this is to go stick it to Justin Fields stands, you're the problem with fantasy football Twitter. As far as you know, my major takeaway, yeah, it's the Fields thing. It's also I have a take about the running back stuff that I think is maybe slipping through the cracks that maybe we'll get to when we get to our guest list. So why don't we go ahead then and without further ado, introduce our guest and allow him to tell us about him and his work and where he's from. It's Timmy. It's Nubs from JWB. What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. Happy to be out with you guys. I think it's kind of interesting what we're seeing with the whole Fields thing and just a little bit of like insight to where like people are going to start projecting or saying, hey, I knew this, I knew that. But with all the movement, are we going to even have any clue really yet how we're going to be able to say, hey, this team's going to have this number of passing attempts or they're going to do this yet? I think there's been way too much movement to even have an idea yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And still a whole lot of pieces of the puzzle with the draft to put in there. I personally the other day, like I had like a little two tweet thread because I don't pay for premium. And it was like, basically, like worst case scenario, he lands somewhere like Seattle or Pittsburgh and he's a starter in 2025, at which point the price to find out will be fine. And so that's kind of where I'm at, you know, like not really trying to overreact to it. So tell us about JWB and what you guys are up to and what you do there and all that.
Yeah, at JWB_FF on Twitter, JWB Fantasy Football on YouTube. We have a Discord. But we make content all year. We do redraft content. We do dynasty content, best ball content. I'm trying to think what else in terms of what I haven't covered. Sleepers, weekly sit starts. We're all around because we have a group, I want to say probably, I think we're in like 8 or 9 deep that we kind of hit all the spectrums throughout the year. Really really passionate about the game and just the sport of football. So you're going to get different insights. We have some top rankers for fantasy pros. We have FF Tyler, who I believe was top 5 this year, finished highly last year. And also FF Buffalo, He also finished pretty high. So, and then we have, you know, Wyatt running a lot of the stuff with our best balls, as well as a lot of redraft. So there's just a lot. We have a lot of guys that contribute, and we do have some just some backing behind us on our performances that show that we have some things that probably can get some insights from us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You guys are churning out content, and sometimes you can churn out content, and you're churning out content to churn out content, but y'all are churning out good content. It's super organized. You've got that clip spreadsheet that has like a video link to every time you talk about a player, there's a clip of it. You know, the graphics are crisp, like, you know, you're humble, you're funny. Like we love JWB, right, Josh?
Yeah, I've been on. Luckily, I was able to be on a show with a lot of people from JWB. I was on there with Tyler once. We nerded out over D&D and Natural Light. And then I was also on Jake's Two Average Husbands podcast. And I was also able to join Wyatt and Skylar for one. So I'm in y'all's Discord. I love it. Y'all do a great job. And we love all of you. So
I think The last time I was on a JWB show, I was telling people to sell Puka after that first week. Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of the benefits of that Clips catalog, is that you can test us. Go back and look at, pick out a player. Go back and look from the first take to the most current take. See if things have progressed or how they've changed, where we were right, where we were wrong. That's a great way to test to see if you enjoy the advice that we give, or the takes that we give, perspective that we give, and kind of go from there. I think that's a great way to start.
All right, so before we dive into Timmy's takes, TM, on this wild week of transactions, it is time to pay the bills. So this show is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog has it all. They have sorry, Timmy, with that little thing in their way there. They have player pick'ems, DFS, and of course, the, you know, famous for best ball tournaments and private leagues and all that jazz. Big board, little board, kicking off for the pre-draft D-gens like myself, who are already a few drafts deep and ready to lose some money. They also have not just football, other major sports, a weekly joke that things like baseball, golf, and basketball are considered major sports, and I'm not sure why. But why am I talking about this? If you are a new account on Underdog and you use our promo code GF2, Josh Norris of Underdog will match up to $100 of your original deposit over there. So if you're watching here on the YouTubes, we have a nice shiny QR code. Go to underdog.com, go to the Underdog app, use promo code GF2, plunk down some money, get some deposit matched, start playing, and maybe start winning more than I do. So speaking of, I don't know, professional transition, Justin Fields, his former team. Oh, actually, you know what? Whatever order you want to go in, Timmy, what's your first wild week of free agent frenzies, fantasy fallout funkiness that you want to talk about?
Yeah, as a fanatic fan of the of the Chargers, I hated to see Keenan go, but I think it's going to be a kind of an interesting ride when it comes to the Chicago move, because we don't, like I was saying before, we really don't have a great feeling for how this offense is going to run. And as well as like Keenan having to share with DJ Moore, DJ Moore having a 25% target share last year, and then Keenan Allen being around 23%, 150 targets for Keenan. We saw great performances from both of these receivers. They're both top 12. My question is, are they both going to be supported that way? But in the end, like even just currently, if we're looking at keep, trade, cut, right? And I'm not a big fan, but I think it's at least for reporting purposes of what the markets are reporting as his value. He's wide receiver 45, 110 overall. And that's way too low. Where if he's getting traded for a fourth round pick to just dump salary, the team that's trading for him, the Bears, would have an expectation that they're going to use him. And just may not be in top 12 status, but I still think he's a guy that's worth trading for. And I think that for these guys to really reach their ceilings, both DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and then like Swift as well, I thought it was actually necessary to move over to Caleb just because of Caleb's ability to kind of stretch the field side to side when he's in the rolling out of the pocket, but still looking to throw, kind of making plays downfield where it was then turned into a run right away. So I think that we do see opportunities for these guys to kind of break big plays in the game if Caleb is who people think that he's going to be. But the real question I have is going to be, what's the volume? What's the ceiling for these guys? But I do think that for their current price tag, Keenan's definitely a guy I'd want to kind of bring on to most of my dynasty rosters. And I think just in terms of advice, I think it's important to understand the size of your rosters and the size of your starting lineups when kind of absorbing advice or takes or whatever from whoever you're listening to, because I might say, hey, go buy X player. He's wide receiver 60, but you have a start eight that rosters 20 players. That player is not as relevant in terms of advice to your league in that sense. But so if you have a in most leagues, Keenan's going to be worth it, but especially in leagues that maybe are start 10 or deeper, and you can get him for something that's not considered truly elite prices, I think you're getting yourself a very elite flex at least.
Josh, what are your thoughts on the Keenan side?
Honestly, when I first saw that, I thought they might hang on to Fields just to make sure that they can get that volume and you have a sure passer. But I do think, you know, first year coming in, Caleb Williams is going to do about the same things Justin Fields did. So there is a question on target share, because Cole Kmet demanded, I think, 18-19% of targets. So he's a favorite as well, especially for a younger quarterback on shorter intermediate. But I think both players have a skill set to where they can both stretch the field and catch intermediate passes and run after the catch. So I think it's good. I don't know if it's better than it would have been with the Chargers and Herbert, with Greg Roman and all them, but I think it's going to be fun. I'm actually really excited to see this Bears team, and I'm excited to see what they do at running back, if they go and sign another one to go with Herbert and Roshan, or if they just go with those two and hope it works. So I'm excited for the move. I'm going to move him up a little bit from where I had him before, so, which is, I think, in into the 30s.
Well, they do have Swift that they – I mean, I don't know that they're going to use him well, the Bears.
I missed that signing.
Yeah, I don't like that one as far as that landing spot goes. But maybe that's for another day.
Well, that answers my question. They're going to roll with those three probably. Herbert, you know, and Roshan actually, were early downs.
Interesting. What if they trade Khalil Herbert to, I don't know, like a team that really needs a running back, Cowboys? That might be fun. But anyway, so let me ask you all this. From the other end of things, bad for Justin Herbert, right? Harbaugh plus Roman plus no Keenan. Like, even if they bring Big Mike back cheaper, I don't know. Like, I was looking for an excuse to put Richardson above Herbert in my rankings, and I just did today. Timmy, what do you think about what this does for again, you know, obviously the sort of disclaimer of this entire episode is we're still in a low information period of the year, and we're just kind of, you know, speculating. But what do you think this does for Justin Herbert?
That was kind of a concern of mine when they brought Harbaugh in, was what is the volume going to look like passing-wise? And every basically breadcrumb that's been left for us has been that they're going to focus more on the running, but they currently don't, I don't think, have the starting running back on their roster right now, unless they're going to run with Gus Bus. But I don't know. I think that it would be misguided to look so short term on Herbert, but also to understand what the ceiling is probably going to be, and that the ceiling has definitely moved down, even on a weekly basis, maybe on a seasonal basis. But you know, you have a solidified quarterback in your lineup. And so I think that that's something that could be concerned about, where like you're not just dumping him. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that there are times when you do need to make moves where you might want to move off. Right now is probably not it, just because the market and the news is so recent. But yeah, you don't want to be holding so much value for like quarterbacks that aren't performing. I was huge on Trevor Lawrence last year. I thought the Jacksonville Jaguars were going to go crazy, and they didn't. And a lot of the value that you had inside of Lawrence was for 16, 17 points per game, which only four starting total, like actual starting quarterbacks broke over 20, which that number has been declining year after year, total number of players that are doing that at the quarterback position. So 17 might not be as bad, but it doesn't give you that, once again, that true difference making point total at the position, where you just might be holding on to way too much value that's actually not helping you score points and win your matchups.
So Keenan Allen goes into his age 32 season with a likely worst passing situation, worst quarterback situation, especially or at least early on with the rookie, even though he's dynamic, right? So when you think about what the points per game are going to be with that rolled in, A, what's the price to find out? And then I guess I'll say my other question about Roma Dunze in a minute. So Josh or Timmy, you can go first. What's the price to find out on Keenan Allen? Are you moving the 206 because a lot of receivers you like are gone then and we're in running back hell? I don't know. Just off the top of my head.
You want to go first, Josh?
Oh,
okay. Yeah, I think so. For me, when I was kind of scoping out my draft board, 206 is kind of my line of demarcation. It's like the last part before it jumps a tier or drops down a tier, which could change based on, you know, it could change slightly based on where people are drafted or even draft capital, which I don't like to lean on very much. But yeah, I would definitely be moving 206 for Keenan. The likelihood that you get even a season of what Keenan could produce next year for you out of your second round pick is pretty low. So I'd rather chase what I know is someone that could be considered close to an elite producer, if not just like below that by a step, and supplant that in my lineup where I'm not even replacing a guy. I'm just including him as an addition. That just gives me such a leg up on like at least 5 or 6, 7 different teams in my league that helps me separate and become a true contender.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I would trade the 206, and this might be stating the obvious, but obviously if you're rebuilding, you know, trying to add a 32-year-old wide receiver who's going to a team, it might not be the best option. You could probably take that pick and try someone younger. But I'm also a believer in the fact that having two good wide receivers on your team is good for both, because I feel like Keenan Allen last year, especially once Mike Williams went down, I mean, they're not going to cover Quentin Johnson too much because he can't really do all that much. So I think it's just going to open the field up some more, especially having a decent tight end in the middle. So I think it's going to be better for both of them, even if the volume might not be there. And, you know, it's not Justin Herbert, which I think Williams would be good, but Justin Herbert's an elite talent that we've seen. So,
okay, so you mentioned having two good wide receivers. My next question, I'll start with you, Josh. At 9, the Bears draft Roma Dunze, and now they have – 3 very good wide receivers. And Odunze, with the 2 wide receivers they have now, is the type of skill set that they could plug in that they kind of, I don't want to say need, but that they don't have with the combination of Moore and Keenan Allen. Does that sour you much on Keenan Allen and or DJ Moore if Odunze gets drafted or no?
Year one, yes. I see it kind of being like JSN going to the Seahawks. I think there will be moments, but I think those other two guys have earned their targets and they'll continue to earn them probably at a higher rate. So I think year one it might be, but I think that also opens up a good buy opportunity. Like I got JSN for pretty cheap in a few leagues where I wasn't able to get him in the rookie draft because people soured on his stat line. When if you watch the games, he looked good. They threw it deep to him. He's just – I mean, he's behind two veterans who know how to earn targets. So,
Timmy, how about you? If the Bears draft Odunze, are you lower on Keenan Allen automatically?
Probably a little bit. My concern is because I think that they're not the same. No, none of those receivers are the same player, but I think they capture stats a lot of the same way where they're more like in terms of volume. There's not a ton of big plays that we get from DJ Moore. Not a ton of big plays we get from Keenan. And I kind of feel like Rome is more of a compiler. And not a bad way, in a way in which I think he can be a guy that supports, you know, getting over 100 and some targets a season and close to 100 receptions a season. I think that's possible in the right situation. But I think because of that, it kind of lowers, once again, everyone's ceiling a little bit. But once again, like Josh was saying, because I think it's crazy that people are out at JSN already. It's like, what? That the first year may not be as impactful to the veterans and their performance.
All right.
I mean, look at Nico Collins just as a case example. Took 2 years for him to break out. Now he's a top 15 wide receiver dynasty for a lot of people. So,
you know, competent quarterback play is a hell of a joke. What, Timmy, what's your next on your list of 5 here for this wild week of frenzied fallout?
I'm rubbing my hands together because I've been waiting for this for a while. I wanted Hollywood to get signed somewhere. I was either rooting for KC or I was rooting for Arizona. He got to KC. So I'm pretty excited about Hollywood, but I think it's important to kind of discuss like The day before he was signed, he was wide receiver 48 on Keep Trade Cut. And he was the same valuation as Jaylen Warren. Now he's wide receiver 34 currently. And he's the same valuation as David Montgomery, just based on their numbers alone. So we've seen already kind of a jump in his value. I'm one that likes to transition running backs into wide receivers. So I would definitely be discussing moving like a Montgomery for a Hollywood. But I think it's important to kind of see the forest for the trees. He's had top seven stretches, even just the season before last. I believe it was first 7 weeks of the season, he was wide receiver 7. So he has that capability, but we've also seen that KC, their depth of target has dropped every year, and he's not a Tyreek. So I'm not saying he can't be a deep threat, but he's not going to be exactly like what we think when Tyreek was there performing, because he's the speed receiver. No, but I do think with accurate passing and with enough of a volume of attempts, I also each season I kind of it's not like force, but if I come to a conclusion about something, I kind of like ride with it. Where like the year before last year, it was about kind of condensing your quarterbacks because there was going to be kind of that quarterback gold rush where there was like the top and then almost nothing for scoring wise. And then last year it was that defenses were really going to impact scoring, especially quarterbacks. And this year I think that outside speed receivers are going to be really important to be able to break coverage because of different cover nines and like box and triangle type looks, where the middle of the field's kind of covered up, as well as you kind of got to confuse either the deep safety or the middle linebacker. And by having a deep outside receiver be able to push pressure on the deep safety, you really put pressure on the middle linebacker, which is opens up the middle of the field. So I think that these guys are going to be more in demand. This might end up helping Rashee Rice, who I'm not a big fan of, actually. I think that he only got the ball in spots that he could perform. But I think as a structure, that is something that could really positively impact the Chiefs. But the only way that you defend Hollywood is that you actually have to throw him the ball. So I think that helps him both kind of. It's a yin-yang type of thing where Mahomes is going to have to take shots to prove he's a threat, and he's going to be successful on some of those shots, which is going to help Hollywood score points week to week.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of am on the fence about what it does to the other pieces, but I think it's important to realize that is certainly part of the outcomes, is that, against these, contemporary defenses, that a guy like Hollywood, is taking, I don't want to say taking the top off, because we always use that phrase for guys who just take the top off. There were plays last year. People, I was watching some YouTube videos and they were slowing things down, where like MVS was even open and Mahomes was like, nah, and like bought time and went somewhere else. And that's probably not going to happen with Marquise.
I love that point so much.
Josh, what are you doing with or what was your reaction, or what's your take with Hollywood?
Well, I think when we did the last show, it was a few days before that happened. We had talked about how whoever goes to the Chiefs, their price might be inflated a little too high just because they're paired up with Patrick Mahomes. And that's a massive jump in just a day or two, to go from in the 40s to mid 30s, which I've been a Hollywood believer. I've had him 33. I haven't updated my rankings since all this. I'm going to let it settle down and really think about it, but I think it definitely does boost, and I think it's going to help the whole offense. Like I said earlier, I think the more weapons you have, if you have a quarterback that can distribute to all of them and read the field, it's going to open it up for Kelce. It's going to open up more ideal looks for Rashee Rice. That way he doesn't have to be that alpha wide receiver on the outside. I think Hollywood Brown doesn't get enough credit for his yards after catch ability. He's really good with the ball in his hands and not just running in a straight line and outrunning the defender. So I've always been a Hollywood guy. I am going to go, since I have so many shares, I'm going to go and try and sell some of them just to see what I can get for it. Because I think some people might want to put him up in like the top, inside the top 30, top 25, just because it's landing spot. So I'm going to try and move a few, but I'm not just going to take what I can get. I'm going to try and, obviously return good value on it.
Well, that person is me. I think I had him in, say, I think like the early 30s, like 31-ish or something like that. I had him like 27, 20. So he's up at the top of that tier now at 22. Yeah. I think this is great for him, because on the one hand, you can say, oh, I have injury concerns about him. On the other hand, you can say, injury prone is a myth, and a guy, he missed time. But when he's healthy, he's been effective and targeted and fast. So speaking of Josh Norris, who's going to pay for your $100 of your new underdog deposit, he threw up a stat from Next Gen Stats that Hollywood is number two in routes run reaching over 20 miles per hour since 2020, right? Now he's 40 routes behind Tyreek Hill, you know, so the gap between one and two is huge, but he's two, having missed time, you know, after I think the latter part of 2022 and some time last year with the heel, playing with, you know, non-Kyler quarterbacks and for much of the year last year, getting, you know, the air yards that are prayer yards. Like, I think he's a case of one of those guys who a little bit of that kind of out of sight, out of mind, like wasn't producing and or was off the field. And we kind of forget how much we like him and how good he looks when he's good. So let me ask you this, as someone who might try to sell a share, or and Timmy, you can veggie back on this. Someone offered me Hollywood for the 202 in a league where I have 14 picks in that rookie draft. And certainly, to the extent that you are looking at building a roster in March, he would instantly become my best wide receiver, right? It's a rebuild job. So I countered with the 204. And I threw back a 25-3rd, and we got it done. Seemed pretty even to me. I happen to be a little lower on guys like A.D. Mitchell and Brian Thomas, and I figure later on in that second round, when I have other picks, guys that I like more, like Ladd and Roman Wilson will be there. If I want a running back, it'll be there, if I'm even using the pick. So I was okay with that. What do you think about that, Josh, as a seller? And then Timmy, what do you think about that? 204 and a 25-3rd.
I would want more than that. I would want something towards the end of the first, because I would obviously rather have Hollywood than the 204, especially with the Chiefs. So I like that deal for you, especially if you have that many picks and he instantly jumps in as your top wide receiver. It gives you a little bit of higher floor so you can take some shots at some, you know, other rookie wide receivers and, you know, still have a decent point output per week.
What do you think, Timmy?
I love it. I love the 204. I actually had offered the 202 for Hollywood and Dulcich in a best ball dynasty league, and I got turned down. And this was before he moved. This was like 2 weeks ago before there was any news about his signing. I was told that I was close, but kind of disrespectful for not including anything for Dulcich. And I was like, oh, I'm probably going to sit there. But it's really nice that they didn't counter even to take more of your picks either. Like, yeah, there was the third, but you had moved back. So sometimes you'll get those where they'll want two or three extra picks because you have them. But I think, yeah, I think even up to the 202 is something I'm exploring. Now, is it something I'm waiting till I'm on the clock? We're getting close to the draft time where someone might get excited. I might be able to flip that 202 for, you know, either a future first plus something else, sure, or once, yeah, something like that. So I might hold off the closer I get to the draft, but in a vacuum, I'm doing that every day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think I kind of saw it as I agree with you that, like, that 202 will be much more valuable in a few weeks, let alone on the clock. But then I also thought, well, if I'm going to make the bet to find out that Marquise Brown is going to do this on a one-year prove it to get a contract somewhere else, chances are his price is going to go up too, you know? So it's kind of one of those, like, am I going to, you know, undersell now? Am I going to pay the wait and see tax later? And, you know, so, but yeah, I always love the proverbial vacuum. My podcast partner on my other show hates when I say in a vacuum.
I think it's important to set standards though. You have to know where your baseline is, so then you can make decisions off that. So I'm with you on the vacuum part.
So, Rashi Rice, you know, I understand the idea of the entire pie. I understand the idea of Marquise Brown, moving coverage away and that sort of thing. But I also wonder, I don't want to do like the mouths to feed narrative, but one of my wishes for Rashi Rice this year was that they would expand the types of ways they use him. And I don't know that that does that this year. And so as good as he is at the short stuff, low ADOT plus yak kind of scheme touches, it's still a narrow path to points. So I think I kind of knocked him down a couple spots.
I feel very strongly about this take on Rashee Rice is that they got him the ball where they could get him the ball. I don't think that he's like this, like he has this huge ceiling for growth, in my opinion. I thought even when he played at SMU, he, even going downfield, tried to like find the defender with his body instead of going in and attacking the football. I don't know if he like felt more comfortable knowing where the defender was when then going and trying to attack the football when it was thrown to him. But there's a lot of things about his game I don't really like. And it, you do get a leg up getting accurate short passes coming across the middle in a Patrick Mahomes offense. I'm not blind to that fact that that could continue, and Hollywood might even make it so the coverages are easier and he has less defenders to deal with after catching the ball. I'm not blind to that fact, but for me, Rashee Rice is a sell. But once again, I'm always tentative doing it directly after news. Yeah. Just because either you get the vultures that send you shorter offers, or they see through your intention. So he might just be someone I wait a little bit longer for. I know that even before the Hollywood signing, Rashee was jumping up into certain rankers' top tens and like even higher than that in terms of ranks. So there may still be that crowd that's very in, and you just kind of got to find that person in your league if you're looking to move them.
Josh, thoughts on Rashee Rice and the impact here?
I like Rashee Rice. I like him a lot. I drafted him a lot at the in the middle to early second rounds last year. I'm just waiting until they go and draft another receiver in like the third or fourth round, and then people really start to panic, and then that would even offer up a better window, because I think they were so bad at wide receiver, and that clearly held them back, even though didn't ultimately matter. But I think they're going to attack that position later on in the draft or like middle rounds. So if that happens, that's going to even open up a better window.
It's going to be great when Ladd McConkey goes there at 32 and they don't trade out of 32 and he goes there and they don't go defense. Well, actually they should probably go tackle, but anyway. All right. One more item on Marquise Brown, at least the people now who like to call Patrick Mahomes a screen merchant, we'll see some increased average, was average yards per attempt or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All right. So Tim, what's your next free agent frenzy fallout, freaky, funky, wild, wacky week take?
So I'm from Wisconsin. I'm actually a Packers fan, but I also like the Chargers, as I had referenced earlier. And I want to talk about Josh Jacobs. Now, I'm not a homer. I'm not ever a guy that wants to possess Packer players because they're Packers. I don't like doing that. But I think that Josh Jacobs, his value has just been kind of off for about a season and a half now. And I was someone that really was not interested in ever having any ownership in Josh Jacobs. But I believe that like after the first like five running backs in terms of dynasty ranks, a lot of them don't matter. But I think that Josh Jacobs is one of those that actually do, because I think he can give you pretty consistent points week to week and has good ceiling. But he also knows how to score touchdowns. There's a lot of running backs that don't give you that, at least somewhat form of consistency. And he did it on bad teams. We saw Aaron Jones struggle last year in terms of touchdowns. He only had three, and he had seven the year prior, and I think it was 10 the year prior. So he's had a drop pretty much ever since his 16 rushing touchdown season. But I think Josh Jacobs on a better offense, giving him more opportunities at the goal line. I don't really see AJ Dillon really competing with Josh Jacobs unless they're just giving him a breather. So I think he goes back to that 300 plus touches where he in 13 games last year had like 260. So we didn't even see the full capacity of what Josh Jacobs would do on a full season. And I think that before the news, he was somebody you could acquire for a second plus. You might be a late first or whatever now, but I think that if you are looking for running backs, that could be a move to make, or even if you're combining kind of a pick and maybe you're deep at wide receiver and you kind of do the opposite of what I usually do, where you're taking the running backs and trading them out for wide receivers. But I think that he's a guy that's going to outperform his value, outperform his draft position, even in redraft. And like currently what he is, running back 11, 68th overall. So he's in the sixth round of startups, or sixth round in terms of value. And I think that's kind of late for someone that gives you that close to 20 point ceiling.
Josh, what do you think about Josh Jacobs signing with the Packers?
Yeah, I've talked about on plenty of episodes how the running back landscape is changing, how it's going to more committees, you know, 1A, 1B. But Josh Jacobs is one of the few backs that that doesn't necessarily apply to, because he can stay on the field all three downs, and he's better than a lot of passing backs who just go out there on third down. So I think sixth round, even fifth round, is way too late for someone that has that much volume, especially with the kind of nose for the end zone that he has on a bad Raiders team. So I think it's wheels up. I think I've had him in my top 10 just based on talent alone and knowing he's going to get the volume. So I'm all for that. But one question I did have for both of you, I saw Josh Larkey, pretty popular personality on Twitter. He said he would rather have Josh Jacobs over Saquon with the Eagles. I just wanted to see. I disagree with that. I think Saquon Barkley's an elite talent, one of the best prospects we've seen. But I just wanted to see how close you guys have them or what you think on that. Like them two being right there next to each other.
To me, those were the top two running back signings. I literally have Saquon Barkley 10 and Jacobs 11 in my dynasty running backs right in the same tier. I could see a case for either one. For me, with Saquon Barkley, it's a much remains to be seen with the Kellen Moore offense and the post Kelsey push tush, et cetera, et cetera. So there is some mystery there. Certainly, you know, with Jacobs, you can say other things like, well, you know, Jordan Love is coming into his own, and they've got a fine passing offense, and they're not going to run the ball much, and that's so. I mean, I think you, it, to me, it's almost a coin flip. I don't know that I necessarily have strong feelings one way or the other. What I like about Jacobs, and by the way, remember, like, I think it was one of our first episodes, if not the first episode, going into the 2022 season, my take was, put some respect on Josh Jacobs' name, right? And he went off that year. My take is last year he was essentially just disgruntled and played not to get really hurt and kind of like mailed it in a bit, which isn't a knock on him. It's actually a good thing to say that like this year could be look a little more like 2022 than last year did. I don't know. Timmy, what do you think about Jacobs and Barkley?
So we kind of, I got to plug our show a little bit. We talked, Jake and I talked about this on our last show. I believe it came out last Thursday, but I have them back to back in my rankings, but I want to lean Jacobs because I believe in the health and I believe that he's more likely locked in his role. But I think that both of these backs depend on their quarterbacks because it really depends on if Love continues what he did last year. Are the Eagles going to be able to call enough passing plays to the running back where that's a lot of the places in which Saquon was getting his value, his points, because he wasn't, you know, he scores touchdowns obviously, but he wasn't always like getting a bunch of goal line looks in New York, which could change as well. So there's like a kind of a yin to a yang, a little bit of a sway either way right now, kind of an oscillation, because we're just not sure exactly how these offenses are going to work out. But for me, as I said, they're back-to-back in my ranks. I would lean Jacobs just because I feel better about what I think his production is going to be, what his role is going to be week to week, and his touchdown upside. I do think that Saquon is the better back in real life, but I don't think that matters for fantasy in this scenario. But yeah, I'm more or less just, I'm questioning if Love performs the way he did last year, where they're scoring enough points where he gets looks at the goal line, or if Hurts is going to be passing enough to Saquon for him to be the same Saquon we've seen the last couple of years. Excuse me.
So I saw some people arguing that they're afraid to tush push, but there's two reasons why I don't think that's going to be as effective this year. One, Jason Kelsey retiring. I think him being able to get leverage immediately at the line of scrimmage is important, but also DeAndre Swift got tackled at the 1 yard line an insane amount of times, it feels like. And I think Saquon Barkley is considerably better than Swift, and he was a top 10 running back points per game last year on a horrible Giants offense. And you know what they're going to do. They're going to get the ball to Saquon, and he still showed out. So I think he's going to do a little better. I have him 5 and 7. So, I mean, it's not like I think either one's bad, but I just don't think the tush push is going to be as necessary, at least at the 1 yard line, you know, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, maybe, but I don't know. Just a kind of a hunch.
So I think I forget where I heard it. I was on a podcast. So I was walking the dogs, but I think in the last 3 years or something like that, Philadelphia has the least amount of running back carries from inside. Oh, 30th. So it's third least amount of running back carries inside the one, but has the most between the 2 and the 5. So it's like if if DeAndre Swift just didn't get tackled a couple times, or if Saquon Barkley can just not get tackled a couple
times.
Miles Sanders
too, yeah. He's better than both of them by a good bit. So
yeah. So I guess I'm not sure where I want to talk about like my running back big picture take. Maybe that's with the last thing we're going to talk about, but. For now, I want to talk about startups, because we've been talking a lot about like what price would you pay, and it's usually like existing leagues and that kind of thing. But you know, startup season for some people, because their degens has been going on for a while. For some people like me, because I'm broke and I just the last thing I need in my busy life is another fucking startup. I'm trying not to do any this off season. So no matter where you're at, so we have the we're all playing chicken on zero RB. But now we also have we're all playing chicken because wide receiver 10 through 22 doesn't matter. And now we're saying, well, tight end isn't quite the wasteland that it is. So if we're all playing chicken, who are we drafting? What is the move in a startup? Is there now going to be a time to sneak in and secure that anchor RB? Because after the first, 8-10 dynasty running backs, it's murder. That maybe you take that guy or acquire some picks and take him instead of, say, the wide receiver that you might normally take there, because your wide receiver alternatives are better later. You see what I'm saying? Like, Timmy, what do you is that maybe a plausible path in startups, that now the move is to I'll pass on, Devonta Smith or T. Higgins or something like that. Because to get like a Jonathan Taylor, a Kenneth Walker, a Josh Jacobs, because I can still get a Michael Pittman, a DJ Moore, a DK Metcalf, a Deebo Samuel, a Jordan Addison. See what I'm saying? So like, what is that? Is it changing now? Like, are we now all of a sudden we start to draft a couple running backs earlier?
I think there's a couple ways that this can go, and I don't want to be like, it depends. It's case by case. I at work, we talk about case by case all the time, and I despise case by case, because it
we need vacuum standards.
It erodes standards, and I hate it. But I think that there's a couple ways you could do this, because one, I want to secure studs. Whatever position that is, I want to do studs first, because those are the difference makers that actually will prove to be winners or losers for you. Where even if you look at the wide receiver position, basically you have like a top 6 to 8, and then wherever Tyreek is, because he's never accurately ranked because he's going to retire soon, but he's going to give you that third quarterback in your lineup because he's going to score 20. So I think that you basically should be, whatever the position is, you should be hitting the studs. And honestly, I don't mind them trading back a little bit, because I just want to read off a couple, a couple items. So like in example, we have Cooper Kupp's 96 overall. Then I'm going to miss it. Then Devontae Adams is 85 overall. Then we go to running backs that are after that. Derrick Henry. Then you have Derrick Henry is at 97, excuse me. Joe Mixon's 107. Pollard's 113 currently. That's going to move down. And then we have like Najee is at like 119. Or 122, excuse me. And so I think that there's even more opportunity to basically trade up, secure your studs, move back, whoever your studs are, but then move back and then acquire all of these veteran pieces that are going to score way better than most of the players that are going to be drafted 2 or 3 rounds in front of them because they're young. And you can dominate leagues that way right now and probably pick up a couple firsts on the way doing that. So I think that the real thing should be is identifying who you believe are studs. And if it becomes that it's the running backs, you do that. But also, you always have kind of a safety net in the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round that you can probably find any replacement or any fill-in for a position you didn't get to fill in earlier when you were identifying who those studs were. Because to me, like I said, there's those 6 or 7 wide receivers that are just true difference makers that I'm not moving basically for anybody. Mm-hmm. Because the basically from, let's say, wide receiver 12 to wide receiver 32 – could score the same number of points any given week, and if I can get somebody at a cheaper price, I'm doing that.
Josh, I mean, I don't know how many have you been doing startups or startup mocks, Josh? Where are you with playing chicken?
I did one startup this year. It's actually fun. In that one, we did kickers as placeholders for draft picks, and I got the 101 and 102 with my first pick. But after that, I mean, David Montgomery went round 10. Mixon went round 10. Aaron Jones went round 12. Eckler 11. Derrick Henry 12. Yeah, I might grab one of like Breece or Bijan if it makes sense in the top wide receivers are there. But after that, like Timmy said, I'm just gonna wait. You know, I'll get my stud receivers, get a like Trey McBride, get two quarterbacks, you know, a good placeholder for a young running back, and then just get veterans after that later on in the draft. Because in our going for two or not our going for two league, it was just one running back. But at the same time, I ended up having five running backs in like the top 25 because nobody wanted them. And then next thing you know, halfway through the year, people are sending me trades for my running backs. And I'm like, oh, you should have drafted them. So, yeah, I think get your studs early, get best player available first five rounds or so. And then after that, just move back and pick up the veterans like Hopkins, even for receivers, Keenan Allen. You get some good guys to help you win now.
And if you acquire any sort of draft capital, such as like future first, even seconds, I really try to target, obviously, first, duh. But you still have that window then in future years to replace these vets that are performing as like somewhat studs. Because let's say for instance, Cup is, let's say, maybe 70% of old Cup, right? That's still a starting wide receiver. And let's say he does that for 2 or 3 years. Okay. You then have the draft capital next year to target running backs or wide receivers, depending on what the draft looks like, or trade out of that pick and go get yourself two wide receiver three wide receivers that have the chance to be wide receiver twos in their scoring. And you've then just replaced all the depth that you didn't get, but you were able to target those higher performing, though lower market value players. So
I like that. Okay. What's your fourth wild, wacky, free agency, frenzy, furry, fuzzy, fallout, fun stuff?
So besides Hollywood and besides the other one would be Mooney, one of the wide receivers are very interested in seeing where they went this year was Curtis Samuel. And I am pretty much in love with him going to the Bills. Now, I understand he's probably not going to be one of those guys that jump a tier or become a consistent wide receiver two or anything like that. But he had 7 weeks of double digit points last year. And I'm always coming from this from the perspective of a start 11 or more. So if this is a smaller league in terms of your lineup, this isn't going to apply as much, but I'm always searching for playable flexes that don't break the bank. And I think that Curtis Samuel in a position, I understand that he performed very well last year. When you compare like what Dotson did and what Terry did week to week, he was kind of the target guy, but that doesn't mean that I can't see double digit points more often in a Josh Allen passing offense. That was like, I think 15th, but they averaged 34.1. I think number one averaged like 37. So they weren't like super far behind number one in terms of attempts per game. And it's been pretty consistent the last 3 years with Josh Allen for the number of attempts. So I think we have a strong ability to kind of project what this offense is going to be for attempts. And Samuel, for me, fits right into like what they want to do, especially when it comes to targets inside the slot, because they've been doing that with a lot with the tight ends. But you get even a more dynamic weapon with Samuel. And I think Samuel is able to, you know, find little cracks in the defense and things like that to kind of turn a shorter reception into a longer one to give you a little bit more bonus points. So I think that he's a great guy to try to go target. Now, with the news, it might be a little bit more difficult than what like you'd want to pay for a guy like that, because I think he was like wide receiver 44 last year. So he didn't have a bunch of pomp and circumstance behind him, but I'm probably going to wait till the draft, but if it ends up being that, like, let's say I'm 304 or something like that, and I don't like my available options, that might be a guy I go target, because very rarely are you going to find a guy that can give you flex-worthy play in the third round from day one, and it just helps your lineup immediately.
Yeah. One thing that I was wondering about is how they're going to use him, right? Because when there's skill set overlap or, like, area of the field overlap, I start to have concerns more so than just a pure mouth to feed situation. And when I think about how, at least with Washington, how Samuel has been used in the passing game, I'm thinking, okay, there's some overlap there with Shakir, who we had hopes for, Kincaid, Knox to a certain extent. But I didn't realize that, or I forgot maybe that, like, even especially before Washington, he's had more usage further downfield in the past. Like, he ran Matthew Berry, Fantasy Life newsletter, right? 4.31 40-yard dash at the combine, right? And has caught 25 of 29 deep targets for 20 yards plus downfield that were deemed catchable by PFF over the past 5 years. So when there's competent passing, he can be a downfield threat. Josh, what was your reaction to Curtis Samuel moving to Buffalo?
I think it's going to be frustrating if you have a lot of Shakir, because I see them kind of being similar. They both can run deep routes, but they also kind of play the slot a little. I think what it does, it opens them to be able to move all the pieces outside of Dawson Knox. He can stay in line and block, but you can move Kincaid, big slot. You can have Curtis Samuel as a deep threat in the slot, and you can have Shakir and Samuel both be able to play on the outside too, you know, with Diggs, obviously. So I think it gives them more flexibility overall. And even before this, I haven't updated my rankings. I had Curtis Samuel at wide receiver 47. I've always liked him. He's one of those elite guys that you can bring him on end arounds, hand the ball off to him out of the backfield, and he's going to do really well with it because he's fast, he's elusive. And he's one of those players that's really smart, never does anything wrong, it seems. He's always in the right spot, always making the right reads, hitting the right holes. So I think he's a great person for Josh Allen to have, and I think it's going to be better for him overall, even though he was kind of the first target at Washington a lot of the times. Even though he's not that, I think he's still going to be better just because the quarterback play is going to be so much better.
Timmy, we're in speculation season, as we said before. What are you thinking might be the impact on other Buffalo pass catchers?
I think Diggs will get his targets because, you know, he's just too good to not be open enough to be targeted. I think that we're going to see less from Knox as we continue forward with the development and growth of Kincaid. Going into the draft last year, I thought that I'm gonna forget his name right now. We just talked about him. The wide receiver that you brought up, he's from Boise. I forget his name.
Shakir?
Oh, yes. Shakir, yeah. I thought Shakir had like 10-year veteran type like label for me. Like, he's gonna make the league, he's gonna be in the league for a while, but I didn't know what his ceiling was gonna be. Mm-hmm. And if we kind of look at how he performed, I understand he performed basically better or at levels of Diggs the final, I want to say, 7 weeks or so. I don't know if that's something that like I'm gonna bank on, because with Diggs not performing as well, that might have been a way that they kind of looked in a different direction to kind of get similar production. But I don't really see Shakir like taking a big jump. He's very slight in stature, and it would take basically a Diggs injury, in my opinion, for him to really break out, especially with Samuel there. And I do have a decent amount of him because I liked what I saw. I thought he had very mature route running and an understanding of the game when you go back and you watch him at Boise. So I don't hate him as a player. It's really hard to like romanticize situations too much where like, oh, I'm like, you're going to see Shakir jump up, you know, three tiers, and he's going to be a top three wide receiver 36 or better. I just don't see that. So I think it's more likely with like a Samuel, especially when it comes to how Josh Allen impacts players in the backfield because of how the defense has to play. Like, Cook gets such good looks that even if there was an opportunity for Samuel to go in motion and end up in the backfield to start the play, and he's the flat target or so whatever, the linebackers have to defend Allen before they have to defend the running backs or the backfield mates. So it to me would present opportunity even from that scenario for them to score points too. And I don't see like a Shakir being able to do that. Yeah. So I think that's another way that they distinguish each other.
Given the get him the ball in and then in space and have him do yak / we can even use him out of the backfield, I'm wondering, just out, you know, thinking out loud, if this also impacts James Cook. Because also, wasn't there overlap with Joe Brady and Curtis Samuel in Carolina before he went to Washington?
Might have been a season.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he might know how to use them. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, like how this can have ripple effects on the other pieces in our portfolio.
I don't think it'll affect Cook too much, just because once they made the OC change, Cook was used more as like that true running back and not just somebody who's going to come in on third down and run some routes. So I think, like I said, I think that's going to make the offense more dynamic. And when it comes to Shakir, Shakir's going to come off the field before Samuel does, because Samuel can move anywhere around the field. He can get in the backfield. So, yeah, I It might affect James Cook on third down some more, but I think the new OC saw the talent in James Cook and is going to utilize him a little better.
All right. We have come to our and then also for spice, you know, let's give Buffalo, I don't know, Brian Thomas Jr., A.D. Mitchell late in the first round and have some fun, with that. But our fifth and final free agency frenzy fallout, funky, furry, fuzzy, foolishness, weird, wacky, wild, weak take from Timmy is,
I think, and we talked about this before the episode started, that we're very much not by running backs in the offseason. But I think that the price on running backs is way too cheap right now, that I'm going to go against that a little bit this year, against that practice, against that rule. And I'm going to acquire some running backs right now, because I don't think the ones that have been moved, especially, I don't think that they're in any sort of threat to lose their job to a draft pick. So I feel like there's more security in a lot of these players now, but the prices don't reflect that, especially when we look at startup values and things like that. That I might be throwing some second round picks around for some of these guys that, once again, are going to outproduce the draft capital that they cost, and outproduce what most players that are going to be drafted at that draft capital are going to be able to produce. So I think you're just supplementing your lineup with way better players that score way better points for way cheaper prices, just because people are so blinded by the rookies. And I'm going to take that risk, and I might buy three and hope that two of the three are healthy when the season starts, and then just go from there.
Josh, the other week we were talking about, it's going to be interesting to see if teams make the calculus of, with cheaper running back contracts and an increased cap, I might as well throw a few million dollars at to find out with Josh Jacobs, a fairly known quantity, rather than, you know, see if Marshawn Lloyd can pan out. Would you do what Timmy's doing, and essentially that same calculus with second round picks and stuff like that with these running backs? Even though, as we said before the show, we're kind of team don't buy running backs in March.
Yeah, weirdly enough, most of my teams, because I meant to bring this up, we were talking about startups. I'm notorious for when people zig, I zag. And I felt like last year people were so hell-bent on going zero RB that I was sitting there just – most of my teams, I have four or five running backs that are going to start. So for those teams, obviously not. And I might be willing, if I, you know, sold out to try and win, gave up some second round picks to try and win, and I have a bunch of running backs, I might try and shop them to people and try and get some picks and play the other end. But the teams that I don't have running backs, I think I am, especially second round, because after the first half of the second round, like you said earlier, it's a teardrop after 206 when you can get McConkey, even Pearsall for me. If I have later second rounds, I'm definitely going to try and buy some running backs.
Now, if I don't feel that I'm contending, in some ways, I kind of don't even want any running backs. Like, I protest having to even start any. You know, I'll throw in Amari DiMercado and Ty Chandler and all that, right? And so maybe a rule of thumb is, like, only if I think I'm competing, give me a running back that's actually producing this year.
Yeah.
But then there's something also to be said for if the cost is cheaper now, like Timmy's saying, you know, sort of as a corollary to that, the value may rise in the offseason. So it may just be a bet, a speculation on, you know, on Clutch the Pearls running back value increasing, and it just being something that you could flip.
I have a take on that, because I talk about this when, like, even like trading. I love Devontae Adams, Packer fan, duh. But I think that he's way undervalued just based on his rank and how he performs. But I don't even have an issue trading for him, like, on most teams. And I understand being like 33, that's kind of the limit for a lot of trades. But players like that give you access to other players that picks don't, in my opinion, after the draft.
Sure.
Meaning, Devontae Adams might not be the best example, but let's say we have a 31-year-old wide receiver that's performing in the top 18, right? It's more likely that I can move that player to a different team that has a wide receiver that I want, because I can give them a player that is replaceable enough in their lineup to score points, where they're not missing out or not losing out on that, and they're not getting a black hole in their lineup by having to move X player for a draft pick either next year that they can't use until next year's draft, things like that. So I think that there is still an opportunity, like you're saying, with even rebuilding teams, where maybe you end up getting bad example, but let's say you traded for Saquon before he signed with Philly and someone really likes Philly, likes him in Philly now. You might be able to move him for a cheaper running back plus a first or plus a pick or something because of the fact that Saquon is better than X running back you're getting back. And then you've just increased your ROI as well as then increased your draft pick count.
So without getting into it too much, because we are kind of crossing that hour Rubicon, I've been thinking about this a lot. And some people are saying that this free agent frenzy on running backs was sort of an indictment on the 2024 rookie running back class. And I think to me that's reading it wrong, or at the very least, simplistic. I think it's a number of factors like anything else, right? We have the increased cap room. We have a, I don't want to say historic, but really good free agent running back class coinciding with a running back rookie class that, you know, isn't bad, is just missing the top end. You know, like whoever your RB1 is and in your rankings, you probably feel about as good about him as you did about, you know, Zach Charbonnet last year, you know, before the draft. So we're really only missing that elite top, right? And elite top, that's a whole other podcast. There's going to be running backs taken, you know, between the third and fifth round. They're going to get NFL jobs. Teams are going to rely on them for touches. The Bengals, sure, they like Zach Moss and Chase Brown. I don't know that a team going after the Super Bowl wants to go into the season with those being the top two backs on your chart. If you're the Giants and you're Coach Daboll, who may be coaching for your job in this sort of I have to put up with Daniel Jones for one more year situation, I don't think you want Singletary as the 1A on your depth chart. I don't think you want Eric Gray as the next guy up either. So I think we're going to see some of these 2024 rookie running backs surprise a few people about how useful they're going to be. And so I don't think this is necessarily an indictment on that class. I went through for my midweek show, I went through all 32 teams and I kind of put them in three buckets of like, they're a win now team and they really need help at running back, whether it's just they only have two people in the room at the moment or they need a quality back that's going to get a lot of touches. So say, for example, the Cowboys, right? Then there was sort of a bucket of they're win now, but they need a little less help. Either they have more bodies or the top end of their depth chart's pretty good. You know, I don't know, an example of that might be the Packers before they re-signed Dylan or something like that, right? And then there was this other bucket of you're either not win now or you're, you know, unlikely to draft a running back of any consequence. You're just rounding out your room with like Mayan Williams and, Jaden Sherton, you know, at the bottom of your depth chart, right? For me, if you combine the win now buckets, it was 15 out of 32 teams, I think, are in need of some form of notable touches from a running back that is not yet on their roster, whether that's a real cheapy free agent like Rico freaking Dowdle, or whether that's going to be, you know, a fourth round pick on Bucky Irving to catch passes. Like, there's holes. They're gonna have jobs. And as good as the 2025 running back class is, it's a year away. And there's not too much that a team going after the Super Bowl this year can really worry about Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen and Jaden Blue and you know, like, and Devin Neal and Travion Henderson and Quinshon. They don't care, you know, because when those guys blow a knee or whatever, or stay because of NIL, it don't matter to them. So that's my soapbox for, like, let's pump the brakes on the 2024 running back class, especially because, last point, the wide receiver class is a little overrated. It's deep because of, you know, a lot of old guys and transfers and NIL and COVID and all that. But it's deep with, like, guys with holes in their profile and wide receiver two ceilings. So after the big three, it's kind of a crapshoot. So anyway, that's my soapbox as far as how this all fits into the running back landscape. Nubs, tell me I'm not crazy.
I agree with you 100%. I actually wrote down in my notes that I didn't say it. I missed that note. But basically, that me saying acquire these running backs now is not an indictment on the class. I 100% agree with you. I just think that they're cheaper to acquire because they're going to be close to second round picks. So you're not paying premium. You're not paying premium picks to take the risk on a guy that's going to have a whole workload most likely. And I wanted to bring this guy up, but we didn't have room. So I'm just gonna, I want to throw him in real quick. If they don't draft a running back, I think DJ Dallas has some sneaky appeal because Connor hasn't proven 100% to stay healthy. And I have a feeling that he could be a guy that gets some games as a fill-in that could give you some worthwhile weeks and might not cost you anything right now to just hold on to find out.
Now that one threw me – when you almost put that on the sheet, that one threw me for a loop because I looked at DJ Dallas and I'm like, it's a special teamer. Maybe he'll catch some passes. I probably would still, if I'm the NFL and a dynasty manager, probably want Michael Carter or even maybe Dee McCardo. So, like, that one really – But when you put it in the light of, well, if Connor goes down at the moment, who's the next one that we're relying on for those short down and distance, early down, run between the tackles, please get 2 yards and don't fuck up and fumble touches, it might be the veteran Dallas. Yeah. So.
And it could be zero. He could give you nothing, but he doesn't cost you anything either right now. So. Yeah.
And his pick, his media pick, is the best in the game. I don't know if you all remember that. He's got that like wide eyed, like deer in headlights look in his like official picture. It's great. Josh, what do you think about my running back soapbox or DJ Dallas's eyes or anything else?
Well, I mean, you might be a little crazy, but it's not because of that take. no, I think looking at it like, oh, they're assigning all these people because the class is bad. I think that's kind of a binary way of thinking and kind of like a narrow, like tunnel vision view of it. When there's so much context that goes into signings in the NFL. Like you said, a lot of people were coming up at the end of their deals. A lot of teams had more cap space. I think looking at that, like you said, just simplistic and just like an easy take to get out there on Twitter and try and get some clicks. But there's a lot more to it than that. You hit most of them, but I agree with you. And DJ Dallas, I don't hate it. He's been a guy I've kind of picked up and dropped on my fantasy teams for a while now. I think his ceiling is kind of like a JD McKissick role where, like, some games he won't get you much, but if there's an injury or something, he could pop in there and get you 15 points a game sometimes just off receiving alone.
All right. Well, that's
the face you see before you get hit by a bus.
that's the face the bus sees before it gets hit. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, before the targeted marketing sends me Pornhub ads, let's land the plane on this free agency fallout frenzy foolishness, freaky fun, wild, wacky week. Please subscribe, rate, and review, and follow, and all that jazz. If you're listening on the Going for Two live audio podcast feed, if you're watching us here on the YouTube or anywhere else, do feed the algorithm monster what it must be fed. Like, comment, subscribe, bell for notifications. I don't know. Subscribe, tag, hashtag. I don't know. Watch me stream on Twitch and play video games with cat ears. And time for plugs. Timmy, remind folks where we can find you and what y'all are up to.
Yeah, I'm at Nubs on Twitter, double N, double Bs, but really follow JWB_FF on Twitter. You'll find all of our links there, all of our individual contributor takes and things like that. I'm not the best follow on Twitter. Everyone else on my team is better than me. So I don't post that much. So I'm more the video content guy. So yeah, follow them because you'll get a lot of good information. Come check us out on YouTube. We're close to 2,500 subscribers. Help us hit that mark and then check out our catalog as well, because like I said, you can test us. There's nothing that we're hiding. We're historically, you can go back and just look. And then if you have an opportunity after you look at that, jump on our Discord. I think we're over 500 members now and we're very active every day.
And if you got a couple pennies to rub together, you'll have a Patreon too, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So I have to ask the video guy. I was told last time I was on a JWB show that the green smoke at the beginning is family-friendly smoke. I don't think it is. What's the video guy say?
I know nothing about that. Okay. I Skylar's the one that puts everything together with that. He does a really good job. And he's been incorporating some funny, like, Jake is a Bears fan and I'm a Packer fan. When we talk about Bears or Packer stuff, he'll pause the video, throw up some arrows, and, like, call us out as to what we are. Before information comes across the screen, it's been a fun time.
Yeah, some of that stuff's really, really, really good. Like the in video graphics too. I was watching the the third and fourth round rookie like sleepers today, and that was really good. Yeah, Josh, plugs.
Yeah, so I just want to compliment you, Brian. Your poetic prowess paints a picturesque panorama, perfect alliterations today. So I appreciate them. They're fun. But yeah, you can find me running my mouth on Twitter at Rotonaut, R-O-T-O-N-A-U-T. I'm going to go through and update my Dynasty rankings this next week. You can find that on goingfor2.com. Sorry, thrown off by Kyle Curling. I forgot he's from Canada and not like sitting there curling 15-pound dumb weights or dumbbells. But yeah, you can find all my rankings at goingfor2.com.
Okay. Yes, so we have finally found out where we are in the pecking order. We are below Canadian curling, although to be fair, I believe it's some sort of playoffs or championships. You can find me at FFJunkie_ on Twitter. Rankings articles up on goingfor2.com. It's rookie profile season, so I've been doing a few of those. Ladd McConkey's almost done. Going to try to finish that tomorrow, Jeff, I promise. You can find me midweek, audio only, on the Dynasty Fever podcast with Jesse Schneeman from DWZ at Dynasty Fever Pod. Going for Two has a great family of content for you. The website has everything, redraft, DFS, best ball, dynasty, etc. I think we're getting a little more into the betting stuff too. And we have about a show pretty much every day or night of the week for you here on the YouTubes and elsewhere. And of course, we have the free Discord with hella channels. Little purple thing on the bottom right of goingfor2.com when you get there on the website. It's free. Channels for trades, for dynasty, for redraft, for best ball, all that stuff. And you get to, you know, ruin your day by talking to me on there sometimes. All right. So that'll about do it for this episode of Dynasty Saturday Night 5. That's a wrap. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.
Hey, go Irish.